Morton Downey Jr. Show are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WERE, its management, or sponsor.
Studio guest tonight, my friends, and you'll be able to call and talk to the gentleman yourself, is the Honorable Iman Mohammed. Our telephone number is 578-1300. But before you start blabbing, let me blab a little bit and ask him some questions, all right? Then your chance comes.
Good evening, and welcome to our second hour as WERE presents its award-winning hotline to the world, Dr. Morton Downey Jr., broadcasting live from his downtown Cleveland headquarters at WERE. You are asked to participate in this program and share the microphone with local, national, and international guests by dialing 578-1300, 578-1300. And now, to connect you to the world, here is Dr. Morton Downey Jr.
Some people years ago referred to it as the Black Muslims, and the Black Muslims were said to look upon the white man, the blue-eyed white man, as the devils on this earth. But time changes, and hopefully attitudes between all peoples change. And tonight our guest in the studio is Iman Mohammed, who is, let me see if I get the title right. Is it the American Muslim Mission, or is it the World Community of Al-Islam in the western part of the world?
We have been known by both those names.
And how do you prefer?
We are not known by any organizational name anymore. We just call ourselves American Muslims.
American Muslims.
Yeah.
How are the American Muslims, Iman, perceived in this country? Are they perceived as being super nationalistic for the blacks alone, or are they perceived now among themselves as being super nationalistic for a unified nation of the United States?
Yes, my acquaintance with the religion started when I was born, in fact. I can't recall not knowing about it. And it started out being a kind of a black nationalistic movement. It was religious, but because of the emphasis was kind of race-based movement, and the emphasis on race made it nationalistic. When we came to know the true concepts of our religion, the Holy Book, when we came to understand what our Holy Book requires of us as Muslims, we saw our life very much like the life of good Americans. And we decided that that nationalistic posture was not correct for us as Muslims. And now we have taken on a new interest in national life. But it is our interest in national life as citizens of America.
Did you come to this feeling through further studies and analysis of your book, or did you come to this new posture, Iman, because of the fact that the world being what it is, the United States being what it is, it was better to play ball with the so-called white masters?
Dr. Martin, I think it was a combination of those. But the role of the Holy Book, I think, was the one that was really the deciding factor.
And what is the role of the Holy Book? What does the Holy Book state?
Well, if you believe, we were religious. In spite of the things that we believed in that were in conflict with the Holy Book, we were a religious movement. Most of the members who joined the nation, the Black Nation of Islam, they were converts from church life and had Christian backgrounds. Poor people, perhaps the most deprived of the American blacks. Our membership was a membership of poor people and uneducated people, for the most part. hardly anybody was in our community until maybe the last 10 or 15 years. The movement goes back in its history, maybe 50-some years. And we didn't have educated people in the movement. I would say that our main concern was religious, and it's still the same. Our main concern is religion. We are people who fear God, and because of that, the Holy Book decides matters for us. Not how we will fare in America, because I'm sure many of us would be willing to go to jail again. Many of us went to jail because we had the wrong idea about this country. We refused to go to war, refused to join the army. But I'm sure many of us will go to jail now if we thought our religion would be persecuted by this country, you know. So it was God. It has always been God, and still God.
Did your holy book, Iman Muhammad, at any point ever say that the white man was a devil?
We in ignorance, interpreted the English translation to say that. In the English translation of one translator, there are several translators of the Quran, as in English now. One translation says, and on that day of judgment, God will gather the guilty blue eyes. The ignorance of the translator translated blue eyes. Actually, the word means zalcoma. It's a condition of the eye, a sickness of the eye. And it doesn't mean that those people actually have that sickness, just like the blind.
It means people who see
sickness. Yes, that's right. The people who have sickness in their hearts.
Yes.
And it blinds their vision. So it refers to anybody, no matter what color you are. The guilty party in the Quran means anybody who has that sickness of vision in the heart that impairs the vision.
Now, let me ask you, a lot of people will confuse the Muslim movement in this country with Reverend Louis Farrakhan's movement. Is there a compatibility in those two movements? Is there an alliance of any sort?
Yes, it's like one life was there, and the life divided, and part of the community was drawn toward purity of the religion, and Farrakhan's group was drawn toward the nationalistic idea and the emphasis on business, getting jobs, owning businesses. So his movement, though they're religious still, I think it's still race-based, race-centered. And I still think it's too materialistic.
Are there any white members that you know of in Louis Farrakhan's movement?
No, I don't believe they would accept white because they hold on to the old idea for the community, Muslim community should be.
Are there any white members in your end of the movement?
There are a few.
There are a few?
Yes.
So what we are talking about is we're talking about a religion. We're not talking about a racist based religion. We're talking about a religion of
men.
Exactly. Excuse me. It is my understanding that in the last 4 months that there was some kind of an agreement made between your group and Louis Farrakhan's group. Is that true?
Oh, I know what you're referring to. Farrakhan's lieutenant, he came to me and I asked that I meet with Farrakhan in the interest of peace and good relations between us. I met with them, and I was asked to accept that we end hostilities. I told him, I say, well, I will accept that, but I know of no problem for me. I don't have any hostility that would represent a problem for me. But if you want me to agree that we will end hostilities, I say I will. I said, but don't think that that means now. If I see something that should be criticized, that I won't criticize it. But I will not feed hostilities, but I will speak in the defense of my religion.
There is information, however true or however untrue, that Louis Farrakhan has received upwards to $30 million from the Libyan government. There is also information that your religion has, your branch of the religion has received numerous grants from the Saudi Arabian government. Is there any truth in that?
No, that's not true, because that would suggest that we have received millions of dollars, and that's not true. we have received very, very little. When it comes to money from Saudi Arabia, very little. We have received donations of books from Rabitan, which is a religious propagation office of the Saudis international movement. We have received a building. A building was given to a small building, a library, on the south side of Chicago was given to us. But the cost of that building is nothing. It's insignificant when you think about the millions that we associate, billions and that we associate with Saudi Arabia. It's a small, humble building there. We could have done it ourselves, but they wanted to give us that, so they gave us a small building. We use it as a library, for the library. All the money that has come to us since I've been the leader, from outside the country, from Islamic communities, and most of it has not come from Saudi Arabia. It has come from the Emirates. Well, it used to be the Gulf states, from Sharjah and Abu Dhabi,
all right.
Amounts to no more than about $2.75 million total.
Total?
Total.
And that's over the 10 years that you have been the leader
of
the organization.
Some assistance has been given to in the local imams, local leaders, a few thousand dollars, but no big sums of money, no.
When, now, to educate some of our folks, and we're going to go to our telephones in just a few minutes, my friends. 578-1300 is the telephone number if you'd like to speak to this religious gentleman in our studio tonight. When we say iman, what does that mean?
Simply one who leads the service, lead prayers, and address the community, give lectures, religious talks.
Same as a priest in Roman Catholic Church, or
a minister, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A rabbi.
Yes.
Who decides who becomes the head imam or chief imam or how that's expressed?
Well, really, there's no head imam or chief imam. That language was from the old idea, and we don't have that anymore. It's just imam. And the people, the local people, decide who they want for an imam. They see the qualifications of an imam in the person, and they think he's trustworthy, and he has good intentions, and he's the kind of person that they would like to see be their leader. They can choose him. The majority rules.
How many followers do you have in this country?
I don't think of them as my followers now, but we believe that there is well over 3.5 million Muslims in America. They are immigrant Muslims and native Muslims. We represent maybe half of that.
How many would Louis Farrakhan represent?
I don't know, but I wouldn't think he represents a 500,000 people.
500,000 people?
Not even that.
Of course, most people would think that was really stretching it.
And that's really stretching it. I'm talking about people that he influenced, not people that he leads.
Yes, people that he leads, most people were closer to 3 to 5 thousand.
2,000, yes.
People that he influences, I think he influences a number of people in this very community in which you're in right now.
Certainly.
In the Cleveland area.
Oh, yeah.
This might not be good news for people to hear this, but it's said that the Imam Muhammad is a very patriotic and very loving member of the American community. Is that true?
Yes, but with some clarification.
All right, let's clarify.
The America that I patronize is the America that the noblest and cleanest minded and God-fearing Americans conceived in the founding of this country, and those Americans that have continued to back that kind of idea of America. I identify with them, and I'll go to war with them if I have to.
You would go to war
certainly
with them.
And I'm an old man almost.
Heck, you're younger than I am. Who are you kidding? Good-looking young guy like him saying he's an old man. Don't you believe that, my friend?
Back in my troubles make me think I'm old like that.
The Iman Muhammad with us tonight, my friends, at 21 minutes past 9 o'clock on WERE. We're going to go to our telephones after we take a break for some important messages. And we're going to do that in a minute. But the first thing I want to tell you about here at WERE is about my friends over at Mid. Wallace Muhammad is our in-studio guest tonight, my friends. And we're going to open up those telephone lines for you right now.
1-800-578-1300. Obviously, we'll have a few more questions for the Iman, and I want to give you an opportunity to talk with him also. So, Cleveland, open your hearts, open your microphones, and open your telephones, and speak with the Iman. Good evening, Art. This is Mort. You're on the air.
Good evening, Mort. Good evening, Iman. How are you?
Iman, I'm sorry. I meant to tell you to put your headsets on. Art, let me get the Iman so he has his headsets on, and we're all set.
Okay.
Now, good evening, Art.
Yeah, good evening, Mark. Good evening, Iman.
Good evening, sir.
I have a question for you. What do you think the black Muslims are going to have in this country? What kind of impact do you think they're going to have in this country in the future?
I would hope that we would be an influence for giving more minorities a chance to look at poor people, striving people, with a sense of community life and responsibility for community life, doing great things and not depending so heavily upon assistance, whether it be from government or from private enterprise, to manage our own life. I would hope that our community life will become so successful that we would be an inspiration and encouragement to other minorities.
Would you say, and Art, I'm going to jump in on your question here, would you say, Mom, that what you were looking for would be a situation where your religion could be to its people the same thing sociologically that the Mormons have been to each other as a unified group in supporting each other?
Because we have the same sense of community responsibility. We have the same sense of, independence as a community. We take pride in doing things as much as we can for ourselves.
Go ahead, Art.
Okay, I got one more question. What do the black Muslims think about this African situation and sending money over there?
Well, we have ourselves made a contribution. We feel obligated as sensitive human beings to do something. But again, you know, none of what we're doing, we know it's not a final solution. We know that the solution is going to come when Africa is able to do more for themselves.
The solution, Art, as you've heard me say on this program 100,000 times, is not for us to be sending food and grain over to a country that can't distribute it through the country because they don't have ports, because they don't have roads, because they can't grow their own, because they don't have irrigation systems. While we're spending all of these so-called humanitarian billions, which is a lot of crap, all right, because it's not humanitarian, it's intended to keep Africa in slavery, and we can keep them that way as long as we feed them during every drought year. And as long as we don't build the roads, as long as we don't help them build the ports, and as long as we don't help them put in the irrigation so that they can feed themselves and they don't have to turn to Western civilizations to be fed.
Okay, Iman, I want to wish you the best of luck with your future plans.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thanks, Art. Thanks for calling us here at WERE. Let's go to, is this Ginny?
You still got me, Mark.
I'm sorry, I'll go to Ginny then. Ginny, you're on the air at WERE.
Yes, I'd like to make a comparison, but before I do, I'd like to tell the man something maybe he's not aware of.
Okay.
Maybe it's because, a lot of people don't admit it because Farrakhan is criticized so heavily, people don't admit that they follow him or listen to him. But if he would have been in Cleveland or even Detroit, whenever Farrakhan came to Cleveland, down at Cleveland State or any of the Baptist churches, they always have to turn people away. And there's more Christians in the church, especially during this past year when Jackson's campaign came to Cleveland, they had to turn people away, and most of the people in the church were Christians, not Muslims. So I think he had more of a large volume of Baptist people and Christians maybe than he do actually members. So, you know, like if some program ever took off the ground or something like that, some mass movement was made, a lot of people would be surprised because they seem to underestimate people who they disagree with strongly or don't believe in their views or something like that.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, but you've got to remember there's a lot of people who go see, or a lot of people in town here who went to see Madonna who could care less about Madonna's music or anything that she does, but it was an interesting thing to see. It was an oddity, and that's what's happened with Louis Farrakhan. Anyone is going to go see someone. I mean, I can make a personal...
I mean, this is before even the Jackson campaign, before the one...
Oh, sure.
...America even knows him. Now, the comparison that I like to make is that I know whenever a white male, whether they... or black male, who seem to be very strong in their views on things, a lot of blacks seem to view them as racist. You take, for example, George Wallace or even Ronald Reagan. A lot of whites admire these men because they stand up for what people say, speak their mind. And when the blacks do it, also the males do it. You know, they seem to think them as being racist, white race, or black
race. Oh, sure.
Racist.
Oh, and that's human nature, Ginny. You know that.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's a lot of people I know that admire Farrakhan. I'm a Baptist. Is because of his strong views on familyhood and the men taking on responsibilities of absentee as fatherhood.
Well, Farrakhan got himself in trouble when he started talking about Adolf Hitler being a great man, all
well,
right?
No, they misinterpreted that whole
thing. No, I've read the entire speech. I know exactly what it said. There was no room for misinterpretation in that speech whatsoever.
Well, they had the tape. But I'm just saying, when the man said that he had very little following, these are people that I see every now and then that come almost every time you're here. I know down in Cleveland State, too.
Okay. Jenny, did you have a question for us tonight?
Yes. I would like to know, here in Cleveland, they have a mass up on Euclid. And I was wondering, do they have to report to him now, you know, to head him in? Do they have to send money to local masses here down on 75th and Euclid?
No.
Temple in Chicago?
No. They didn't have to do it even before. Since I've been the leader, that wasn't required. They don't have to do that, no, indeed.
Okay, what about the newspaper? When sales of the newspaper, do they have to send a profit to Chicago?
No, they do not.
Okay.
That's good news, isn't it, Jenny? That's just what you wanted to hear. I know that. Ahmed.
Yes, sir.
How are you, my friend? Good
right.
to talk to you.
Yes, sir.
You're on the air with the imam.
Okay, I would like to welcome the imam to Cleveland, Ohio. We're always honored to have him here to do Jummah prayer with us.
Yes, thank you. I'm happy to be here, too.
My question to imam would be, could you describe briefly why it was necessary to introduce another means of expressing human concerns, as in the contents of the monthly magazine Progression? And would you urge Muslims and non-Muslims to read this magazine, and why? I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Did you understand the question?
Yes, I
believe. All right. Go ahead, Ahmed. We'll take you off so we free up the line for someone else to call in.
Yes,
sir.
Yes. we feel that the life of people of America or any big industrial society like ours, complex society like ours, pardon me, is going to become more burdensome for the uninformed or misinformed individual as time goes on. The greater population we get, and the more the problems increase for the country, the more demand for productivity on the part of the country puts more demand on the life of the individual. And we believe that the only way we can survive in the future, now and in the future, is to keep this sense of respect for the human person, the human life, but also a sense of respect for the community life, and that includes the national life.
Hey, man, a question from this side of the microphone. Have you found in your studies, and I know you have spent a lot of time studying it, have you found in those studies any type of chicanery or real benefit, I guess is the word I'm looking for, to the poor people in this country? And I'm not going to designate black, Hispanic, I'm just going to designate poor. In the welfare system as it is constituted now, is this a benefit or a detriment the way it's constituted now?
It's a benefit, it's a necessity on the one hand, but when we look at the degree of the dependency in African blacks on that kind of help, and how it has just destroyed the family role, the man role in the household, and the woman's
Very cleverly contrived, isn't it?
Yes, and demoralized. It has demoralized many blacks.
Yes.
Yes. When I look at all the danger, and that's my opinion, that's the way I'm looking at it. When I look at all the detriment, I say that on the whole, it's detrimental. It's not good.
And folks, if you're thinking about the welfare system in this country, think about this for a minute. Think about how much easier it is to get welfare if the man is not in the house. And how much easier it is to break up the family when the man is not in the house. And in breaking up the family, how you break up the very, very initial unit of government in this country, which is the family. That is where it starts. The family, and then the neighborhood, then the community, then the town, then the city, then the state, then the nation. You have destroyed the first molecule that goes into making up the American family. And I think that is what is so unfair about our welfare system, and it makes people dependent on something and puts them in a position where they can never really attain the greatness that is waiting for them. We're going to go back to our telephones in just a minute here at WERE. Iman Mohammed with us tonight, my friends, on the Mort Downey Jr. program right here at WERE in Cleveland. Stand by.
Is Dr. Morton Downey Jr.
Iman Wallace Mohammed, religious leader, political leader, nationalist, patriot, all of those things have been said. Some of them agreed to, some of them disagreed to. Tonight, an opportunity for you to speak to this holy man as he is a guest in our studio here at WERE on the Mort Downey Show, and you're sitting back, you're saying, my God! I never thought I'd hear this on the Morton Downey Jr. program. What did you think you were getting here, huh? Of course you'll hear this on this program. You'll hear anything that's righteous on this program. Even me, when I feel righteous, and you know damn well a lot of times I do. I made a mistake once in I made a mistake somewhere down the line. I don't know. My mother made a mistake having me. A lot of people say, Kenneth, how are you? You're on the air. Kenneth.
Yeah?
You're on the air, partner.
Okay. I'd like to say hello to you, Mr. Downey.
Hello to you, sir.
And I would like to say assalamu alaikum to Imam Muhammad.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Imam Muhammad, I want to thank you very much. You had a strong impact on my life. And presently here in Cleveland, I'm the chairman of the Crime and Safety Committee, 21st Congressional District Caucus.
We're very happy to hear that.
Trying to get them to some of the radio stations here to take some of the obscene lyrics off, and
take some of the what off, Kenneth?
The obscene lyrics such as Marvin Gaye's playing.
Good for you. Good for you, and such as Prince's. If you heard my show the other night, I did one on it.
Yes, sir. I've been working on that also, and it's been because of Imam Wazdeen Muhammad. Because back in 1975, when he first came into what was then still the Nation of Islam, he made a strong statement that had a very strong impact on my life, and he said the words shape people. And he said, some folks' minds are like wet clay, and words stick to them like wet clay. And it was because of those words embedded in my mind that I took on the crusade to try to do something about this. And all praise are due to Allah that I have been successful. At least I have made some kind of success towards it. I have got WZAK to form a community advisory board where they have a cross-section of the community come in and screen records and lyrics before they're played.
And you got a wild-eyed conservative right-winger to do a show for you, didn't you?
That's true. But I would just like to once again say thank you, Mel Muhammad. I pray for you, and I pray for you to have a safe return home to Chicago. And I have one question. Could you just elaborate on the five pillars of al-Islam? And thank you, Mr. Downey.
Thank you very much, Kenneth.
Yes, the prophet of our religion, Muhammad, the last prophet, peace be upon him, he gave us what our religion was in five simple principles or essentials. So it is to witness that there is but one God and Muhammad is his messenger. It is to pray to that God five times a day. And it is to fast the month of Ramadan, which is the ninth month of the Islamic calendar, and to give charity to near relatives and to the needy for the love of God, and to visit the holy house of God once in your life in Mecca, the holy house in Mecca built by Prophet Abraham and his son Ismail, peace be upon them, once in your lifetime. Those are the five essentials that represent the structure of our religion.
Have you visited that house?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Would you visit it more than once in your lifetime?
You're not required to.
I know.
But many do, if you can afford it. If I was rich, perhaps I would go again.
That is an expensive trip.
But it's expensive, yes, especially from the United States. Particularly from the United States, it's expensive from distant places. So we are not required to do it but once in life. I hope to visit once more before I die.
Kenneth pointed up something very interesting that I'd like to go into for just a moment before we go to our next caller. And that is that you have gone to the forefront in talking about pornographic lyrics. That's what I refer to them, pornography. And your religious organization is being a driving force in trying to eliminate this from our society. Just as I must say, with great pride, that the Mormons, of which I am not one, but of which I have many friends, have gone to the forefront in trying to eliminate abortion. I think you're to be commended on that. A lot of people call it censorship. I don't call it censorship. I call it responsibility of human beings to respect other human beings.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Jawanza. Jawanza, this is Morton at WERE. You're on the air with the Iman.
Good evening. Peace be unto both of you.
Thank you.
Mr. Muhammad, in retrospect, I'm sure that you look on the days prior to and directly after the assassination.
Arabic language and Islamic knowledge. I think he would have had perhaps a less desperate strategy, political strategy, if he had become more grounded in the Islamic knowledge. But that's water under the bridge, as they say. But I loved him, and I still love him, and I pray God for his soul, even now. And we have named a masjid, you know, in New York, where he was most popular, after him. And I think our respect for him is the same. And if you can pass on my wish and for our future relationship to those who follow him, please do so. I pray God that we come together because we're the same people.
Yeah.
Now, the other part of the question about these people, and you're aware, I'm glad to know that you are aware, that these cultist groups and secret groups did infiltrate the following of Imam Elijah Muhammad because he himself kind of invited that kind of infiltration with the language, some of the language that he uses, symbolic language. That is a danger, and I think Islamizing and bringing about Islamic democracy and Islamizing the community and giving responsibility to the local people will make our community unattractive to such people. I don't think their presence is that important now.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask both of you gentlemen, and I pardon my ignorance, but I am allowed that ignorance, the difference between Muslim and Moslem.
No difference.
No difference. Why is one...
Pronunciation.
Is it strictly pronunciation?
Strictly pronunciation.
So...
But some people make the mistake of thinking that Moslems meant historic Muslims. And Muslim meant black Muslim.
That's exactly right.
That's a misconception.
That's why I asked that to be clarified for my white listeners tonight.
Yes. Mr. Downey.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I did have a question in reference to some things that I had been made abreast, made aware of. I don't know if you came across the information. I know you talk about some of the intrigues of the Bilderbergers and what have you. Were you aware that the... some of the shredded intelligence material that had been found by the Iranians had been weaved by some of the great Persian rug weavers, and that as a result of that, there had been some exposés in relationship to the high-level KGB and CIA contact?
Yes, sir, I was, and
okay.
I recognize that some of our own forces were involved in that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I was just wondering. I know you're usually made aware of that through some of your contacts. That's good to hear, though, that the information is steadily flowing out.
It is steadily flowing out, and Juwanza, if you have an opportunity to listen to the show, I have an executive intelligence report every night where I try to get that information out. Unfortunately, a lot of times the lines get, if you've listened, you'll see the lines get cut off, and depending on which country my agents are reporting from, they sometimes take their life in their own hands making those calls.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you listening.
Okay.
Thank you, my friend. We're going to take a break here for some important messages at WERE, my friends. It's 9 minutes before 10 o'clock. Iman Mohammed in studio with us tonight.
I want to feel good about everything in my life.
Cleveland's hotline to the world. Join us. Let the world know what you think. Call 578-1300. 578-1300. Now, your hotline to the world. Dr. Morton Downey, Jr.
Iman Wallace Mohammed in the studio with us tonight, my friends, doing Cleveland honor by visiting Cleveland for a meeting of the Imams in the Cleveland area. And he was kind enough to join us tonight for some time on the program to talk to the people of Cleveland. Now, I think we have time for one more call. Let's go to that call. Ken, this is Mort Downey. You're on WERE.
Oh, yes, Mr. Downey.
How are you?
Fine, and you?
Good, sir.
Good, good. I have a question for Mr. Wallace D. Muhammad.
All right, sir.
I'd like to know what the ideological differences are between Mr. Muhammad and Minister Lewis. Farrakhan, please, and I will hang up on this.
Oh, you can hang on because I might want to ask you a question. Okay? Yeah.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
But I'll hang up instead.
Oh, okay, Ken.
Thank you.
Okay.
The ideological differences are essentially fundamental religious ideas. The way we see God, same way that the great religions see God. We put the heavy emphasis on the importance of seeing God as only one God, but there's no real difference between the way we relate to God or see God and then the way that good Christians or good Jews or the people of the great religions do. Whereas with the old organization under the late leader, Elijah Muhammad, who's my father, and pray God forgive him his sins and admit him into paradise, but those ideas were very, very much a distance from the kind of ideas that we should have as Muslims. We used to believe that God was a personal God, a God who presented himself in the personal image or body of a man, and that God was a black man, and if God materialized or if God was to be seen in person or in essence or something like that, we had to see him as a black person. We were given that kind of belief that countered the white supremacist belief in the white God. And that idea is not acceptable for Muslims according to the teachings of the Holy Book, the Quran. Again, our belief in man, we believe that man is one, and man has become different because of God's design for man's creation. We have become different races, different nations, but God made us one people. Whereas the old belief says that that there were two people, one God made and another one was made artificially, and the white man was that artificial creation. That's fantasy, some kind of myth, concocted by the teacher who came and taught my father in the early 30s. It's nowhere accepted, nowhere known or accepted by Muslims in the world. So there are great, great ideological differences between what Farrakhan and his group essentially believe in and what we essentially believe in.
I thank you very much, Iman, for being with us tonight. What you just said kind of brings up the fact that there was a joke going around. I know God will forgive me because he's got a good sense of humor. He put a lot of us on the face of the earth who were kind of wacko. But there was a joke going around years ago when your father was alive that God came down to earth and he appeared at the Mayflower Hotel. And there was a group of reporters out there, and only one reporter was allowed in, and so they let the reporter in to see what God was like. And when he came out, the group of reporters said to the reporter, tell me, please, what is God like? The reporter said, well, first of all, she's black. Thank you very much, and God bless all of us, and God bless Cleveland. And our crusade continues here at Cleveland to make Cleveland a better place for people to live and a better place for God to visit. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all very much. This is Mort Downey at WERE in Cleveland, my friends. Jim Mack coming in with a Mack Attack, and then we'll be back as we head to Russia for another report on the Executive Intelligence Report tonight on the Mort Downey Jr. program. Mwah!